Great, and we're joined by David Malark, who is the founder of the Archangel Ancient Tree Archive. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
So before we get into the organization, I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself, David, and your journey to get to this point.
Well, the Malark family has lived in Copmish for six generations so far, and we've been in the shade tree business and tree care business since 1964, and our sons, Jared and Jake, both have landscape or tree maintenance companies, and they've done a lot of work in the Frankfurt area over the last 10, 15 years. And we also have Archangel Ancient Tree, which is a nonprofit, and it started 35 years ago when we noticed that the trees that we were growing started to die right down the row, and we didn't know why they were dying, and that was our sole bread and butter, growing shade trees for the nursery industry as well as cities, and it put us on high alert because it was directly affecting our income. So we found out that it was environmental reasons, mostly coal-fired power plants, and the SO2s and the mercury that was affecting our forests and the shade trees we were growing. So we tried to decide to figure out something to grow stronger trees to be resilient to the challenges that climate change was presenting 30-some years ago. Well, we decided, my son Jared and Jake said, "Hey, Dad, you know those great big trees that, you know, we drive around and try and find champion trees, which are the measured largest and usually the oldest of their species?" I said, "Yes." I said, "Well, why don't we clone those? Wouldn't they be stronger?" And that was the genesis of this project, Archangel Ancient Trees.
So can you talk a little bit about the science of how you clone an ancient tree?
Yes. Well, back then, nobody had done it, and so we called Michigan State University and some other universities, said, "Hey, how would we try and clone, you know, the biggest, oldest trees in Michigan?" And they said, "Well, it would be nearly impossible because those older, large trees like that is like asking a 100-year-old woman to have a baby. So it's impossible." And so I trusted them, and my son said, "Well, why don't we try anyway?" So way back then, Jared and Jake used to climb the first trees in tennis shoes and their Levi's. They were early-age teenagers. And you go to the very tops of the trees and take this year's new growth, little cuttings off the very top, and bring them down and then ask them to try and reproduce. Well, that was way back then. Now we have here in Copmish a state-of-the-art tissue culture lab, and we have, I'd say 3,000 or 4,000 redwoods and sequoias, all the largest and oldest in the country. These trees have 30-foot diameter trunks, and some of them are over 3,000 years old. And we have some pretty advanced technology that we've acquired over the decades, and our tissue culture lab, and voila, it's working. And if anybody would like to see how that works, we invite you to come to Archangel Ancient Trees in Copmish and call us first and set up a tour, and we'll show you exactly how we do what we do. And by the way, many classrooms from Frankfurt schools, elementary schools and high school, over the years have been to our tree school here in Copmish. So lots of the kids over the last 10, 15 years have been to our tree school from Frankfurt, and we teach them quickly how to do what it is we do, and they take that new knowledge back to the school, and they're cloning trees, particularly the willows, and have been for over 10 years in Frankfurt. And that effort is, we have an unsung hero that lives in Frankfurt, Margie Grenwald, and she's a retired teacher that goes out to the school classrooms ahead of the kids coming here and teaches them or brings them up to speed about why trees are important, environmentally what they do, and gets them ready for tree school. So you know, the listeners, you got one of your local people there, Margie Grenwald, that really has helped the project, and also your school kids. Many, I'd say several hundred have been to our tree school.
Wow. Does that mean you've got several hundred trees up here in Frankfort?
Well, I'll tell you what Margie has. About 8 or 10 years ago, she took a 3,000-year-old giant sequoia from the top of the Sierra Nevada mountains. That's where the parent tree lives. And it's called Waterfall. It's over 300 feet tall, and the trunk's 32 foot across.
Wow.
So 32 foot wide wall of wood, that's the tree that we went up, and we brought the material back. We were successful in getting seedlings off that tree from the cones. She planted one in her yard in Frankfort, a 3,000-year-old giant sequoia. The seedling, I think, was about 18 inches tall, and it's over 10 feet tall now. So Margie's efforts, there's a 10-foot-tall, 3,000-year-old giant sequoia growing in Frankfort because of that. So we know now, because of her efforts and other efforts, that they grow really, really well along the coastline of Lake Michigan. And this, nobody knew that before.
Is this soil similar to where they came from?
Yes, it is. And, you know, we thought, science thought, and our educators, our universities thought it would be too cold, and the winters would be too long. And normally, giant sequoias grow at 6,000 to 8,000 foot elevation. And so Margie said, well, I'm going to try one in my house. And she did, and it's a darn near perfect specimen of an over 3,000-year-old sequoia. And we have since given away for donations hundreds and hundreds of these trees that are being planted all along the Lake Michigan shoreline, several other cities, and it's pretty neat to leave behind a tree or a forest that'll be around for the next 2,000 to 3,000 years.
And how many different tree species do you have now in the archive?
Well, we've worked on over 130 different species of trees, champion trees, which are the measured largest known of their species. So we've done 130, including the redwoods and the sequoias, and we're still trying more. We just started the East Coast collection. We're going from Maine to Florida, and we're finding 24 of the largest and oldest different species of East Coast trees, and we've begun putting that collection together.
And since you've started doing this, have other organizations across the country come to learn your technique, and do you see this happening in other places as well?
Yes, we have our trees. By the way, we've placed our trees in 8 countries so far: New Zealand, Australia, France, England, Wales, British Columbia, Canada, and that's all I can remember right now. And then other groups have started picking up our process. We're a nonprofit, and we live on donations, and we give our information away to anybody and everybody, including your school students at Frankfort, to help encourage reforesting the planet because of the very, very challenging environmental challenges with climate change, drought and heat that we're all facing. We're really in trouble environmentally by deforesting the planet. By the way, we've cut down 98% of our old-growth forests in the United States. 98% of the old-growth forest is gone. The redwoods that we're doing from California, 96% of the old-growth have been cut down. We cut them down before we studied them, and we cut them down before we even understood how important they were for all living things, especially humans. So we're trying to help reforest the planet with the sturdiest genetics, the genetics of the old-growth trees, and that's never been done before.
Wow. And are there other people that are taking your example across the country?
Yes. Yes, there are other. I don't dare name their names, but two other, nonprofits have.
Uh-huh. Right.
And the nursery industry has begun starting to propagate these trees to supply the national nursery industry for like landscapers and cities.
Do you?
It's not a great movement yet, but it has begun.
Do you find the National Forest and the State Forest here in Michigan having some issues and could use your help? I mean, you mentioned the coal because you had that dying off of the trees you were growing. Is that happening within the National Forest here as well?
Very much so. State and National Forests are under real threats. I mean, take a look at today. It's not supposed to be 55 degrees this time in November in northern Michigan. 2 weeks ago, it was 80 degrees. The climate is changing, getting warmer quickly everywhere. And the climate scientists predict that our weather here at Frankfort, northern Michigan, will be that of Arkansas by 2050.
Wow.
So our climate's going to change to the Arkansas climate by 2050. Okay. A lot of the native species, animals, plants, trees, won't be able to survive that climate shift. And so what we are advocates of is called assisted migration. We're taking the great trees, the largest, strongest, oldest genetics, and moving them north to cooler climates so they can survive. So that's just begun with animals, and we started that 30-some years ago, one of the first, with assisted migration to help keep the trees in our forests here alive by moving them north where it's going to be cooler, hopefully, and more moist. So it's old growth genetics are important. And science has put out over 100 papers in the last 3 years saying, uh-oh, only old growth trees have the genetic memory in their DNA that they can go back and call up for times that they've been through fire and drought. All the trees that we've been planting, we haven't planted old growth genetics. They can't pull those genetic memories up. But with old growth clones and our old growth seedlings, they can. So their chances of surviving what we're starting to go through are much greater. And that effort was led by Morton Arboretum out of Lyle, Illinois, that research. There's lots of science to prove the value of a shade tree in an urban setting. The value of that tree's lifetime is $37,000 per tree in environmental savings. But let's just talk plain talk. Trees shade the earth. Shaded ground is a lot easier to grow, you know, things under, or survive, I should say, especially in our urban areas, our cities. You probably noticed in this summer when you're walking down the streets in Frankfort or, you know, in the surrounding areas, it's just really, really, really hot. Well, when it gets hot, as human beings, we usually head for the shade, don't we? Mm-hmm. Well, the animals and the birds and the pollinators and the microorganisms in the soil, the soil gets too hot. The whole area gets too hot because we've cut all the trees down to build our cities. We should have left the trees up and built our cities in the forest. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's hindsight's 2020. So the best thing that we can do, all of us together, is to start to reforest our urban areas. And trees, by the way, pick up the pollution from all of our vehicles that come out of the tailpipes. And every time we step on the brakes, the asbestos that's released into the atmosphere. And that's called point source remediation, which means every tree in the city of Frankfort helps absorb the CO2 and the toxic materials out of our tailpipes and out of our automobiles and our furnaces. So they're really workhorses to help it be more livable and healthy for human beings and all living things. So that's called point source remediation, or pulling the CO2 and the toxins out of the air and the soil, which trees do.
So I see that you were a sponsor this year of the Michigan Big Tree Hunt, David. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that works?
Well, we've been big tree hunting for 35 years, but American Forest You know, had a list of trees, of big trees, state by state, and they became more and more active in the last few years. And so we thought it would be good to throw our hat in the ring and join that effort. And but we've been searching here in Michigan. I would say a third of all the states in the United States, and we still are, for the biggest, largest, oldest trees, to clone them and preserve their genetics in archival living libraries, or living trees in living libraries, so that we can utilize the, you know, their genetics to help reforest the planet. So that's, we've been doing that for 35 years, and there's a lot of organizations that look at us like we're overnight sensations. Wow. and I'm tickled to say we, last February, we had our 8th feature story in the New York Times. And the first one was 20 years ago. It was a full page in the New York Science Times that went out worldwide. And we've had 8 last Februarys in the New York Times Magazine with our 8th global feature story in the Times. And there's a lot of international media and interest in the project. We do interviews, global interviews, I would say probably 2 or 3 a month. But the project has drawn a lot of interest from around the world, and it's a way to help everybody that can join in to help reverse the effects of climate change, including all of the students at Frankfort Elementary and High School. And we'd be glad to host more classes here to teach your kids how to be a part of the solution and maybe help the future not look quite so scary for them.
So when the settlers came up here, they started planting maple trees. Are they going to be able to withstand the warming?
Well, first off, the settlers, Michigan was one of the later states to be, you know, brought into the Union as a state, because the settlers would push west because Michigan had so many big trees that they didn't think that they'd be able to farm Michigan. Not just taking the trees down, which was a gigantic task, but the stumps. The stumps were so large that they said, no, it's not possible to farm or, you know, to live in Michigan in an agrarian sense. So they pushed west. That's why the western states were developed into statehood, you know, earlier than Michigan. But, you know, man and his saws found a way. It's like the lumber barons that came through and cut down every single old-growth white pine in the state of Michigan. So 53 million acres of old-growth white pine, the largest white pine forest in the world, they cut every single old-growth white pine that we know of. Everybody goes, well, wait a minute, what about Hardwick pines? No, those are second growth. The pioneers primarily planted lilacs, black walnuts, and sugar maples, because they could tap the sugar maples. They could utilize a walnut for furniture, and that was basically any reforestation efforts after the pioneers came.
So Dave has a love of maples. So where will we find the champion maple tree in Michigan? Do you know?
Yes. There's been 3. The national champion, the sugar maple, was in Bear Lake until about 10 years ago. It got cut down. And then the next national champion sugar maple was up in a Traverse City suburb. And 5 years ago, that got cut down for condominiums. And we're currently looking for the next national champion sugar maple. And we think that might be in Maryland. But we have cloned the national champion sugars, so as well as, you know, some of the northern Michigan champions.
So
it's either state champ.
So
I was going to say, it sounds like there's not any special protection for these trees then.
No, there's not. As a matter of fact, one of our former presidents, not that long ago, the week he was elected, opened up all of our national forests and our national parks to logging. Most people aren't aware of that. There's no protection for old growth trees that I'm aware of. And it looks like we're going into a period coming up where any of the environmental issues are off the table here pretty soon. So the trees need our protection. You know, one of the things that was a joy for me was in the new national park, Sleepy Bear National Park on South Manitou Island. The world's largest white cedar lived there, called Land of the Giants. And I was asked to do a tour and explain why 1,000-year-old white cedars, how they could survive, what they look like. And that's on a videotape that's being played up at the National Park headquarters. But we have some really valuable trees that really need protection. And I would say national parks are still safe, I think, from old-growth tree logging, but I'm not sure. It's the protections, it's like closing the barn door after the horses are out. 98% of the old-growth trees in Michigan have been cut down. They're gone. Well, the national champion Norway maple that we did 30-some years ago in Empire, that's on Front Street, it got cut down. The national champion sugar maple in Bear Lake got cut down. The national champion black willows were allowed to die and got cut down. So the national champion American elm, the Buckley elm, it succumbed. To our knowledge, unless it's on private property, there is no protection for trees, you know, due to their status of being an old-growth tree.
Well, how big a maple would be a champion? How, is it the circumference or the radius?
Well, a champion is determined by the diameter of the trunk, the height of the tree, and the width of the crown spread. Those three numbers added together. But like in a sugar maple, the trunk would have to be at chest height, about 4 foot across. So if you have a sugar maple that's 4 foot across, or you could take a tape measure and go out and at chest height, measure the circumference of the tree. Okay, that'll tell you in feet how many feet they are in circumference. And you divide that by 3.12, or divide it by 3, and that'll give you the diameter. But you'd want a tree that's about 4 foot across to be in the range of a state or national champion in maples.
David, are there particular trees or sites that hold special meaning for you personally after doing this work for so long?
Yeah, there's a number of them. You know, we've been a national effort, and we cloned the 1,000-year-old oaks over in Ireland a number of years ago. I would still say the giant sequoias in California that live up in the Sierra Nevada mountains are just spectacular, which ones are left. But those are all being challenged by a 12-year drought without any water. And it's thought that the giant sequoias are going to disappear from California. But those forests are worth going to see. Yeah. The redwood trees, the coast redwoods up in Northern California, there's three or four national and state redwood forests in Northern California that if you drive or walk through those, it will stop you in your tracks if you haven't been there, the reverence for trees that big and that old. So those are important. I can't think of very many intact forests anywhere in Michigan that haven't been logged off three or four times that are really spectacular. We've done some cypress down in Florida, the cypress swamps, with 2,000-year-old cypress, and those are pretty amazing to go through. But it doesn't have to be just ancient old trees. You know, we just start to need to reforest all of the areas that we can to help cool the planet, start phytoremediating or pulling out of the air the excess carbon and toxins. And that's what we teach, and that's what we're proponents of with Archangel Ancient Trees.
Now, isn't there a small section, maybe 7 or 14 acres here in northern Michigan that is still old growth, they consider?
Well, old growth, the term old growth has been subject to change. State by state, they keep lowering the number of years that a tree has to be considered old growth. Now, there's virgin old growth, the trees that have been here since before the European settlers came, that only the indigenous people, you know, lived in. That's virgin old growth. Here in Michigan, I think the current status is 200 years. You'd have to check me on that. But any tree 200 years or older is considered old growth. Well, you know, it's like log size. The state determines log size. It keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller to be considered, you know, a log. So it's a variable thing. If there's 7 to 15 acres of old growth forest, I'd like to know where it is, and I'd like to go visit that if anybody could guide me there.
What about the Hartwick pines?
Those are second growth.
Okay.
Those aren't virgin old growth.
Okay.
So how has your work with ancient trees influenced your personal perspective on nature and the environment?
Well, trees, you know, are the canaries in the coal mine. The trees show us and respond to the environmental challenges that we're going through several years to a decade ahead of what when it catches up to the human family. It's the decline in our forest. You know, there are millions and millions of dead trees in northern Michigan because of the stresses of the environment. I mean, point blank, climate change is starting to eliminate the forest and the tree species as we know it. It's raised the red flag, and it's proof positive that we all need to start doing a bunch of things to help slow this down and reverse it, or I think our children and grandchildren face a future that we don't even want to talk about. That's what it's done for me. And in the morning, I'm 75 years old. I really have a feeling that I'm working for the world's grandchildren. I'm out there fighting, trying to educate, teach, whatever we can do to have everybody start to help reforest the planet before it's too late.
If listeners want to support the mission of your organization and your work, David, how can they do that?
It's easy. You go to our website. We have a pretty interesting website. It's ancienttreearchive.org, ancienttreearchive.org, or just Google up Archangel Ancient Trees, and there's plenty of opportunities to help the project go on. And if you do that, a share of that money will help educate your children in Frankfort, in your elementary and high schools. They've been coming here for a number of years, and we're teaching them everything that we know so they can take that back and help your community and be a part of the solution. And that's, you know, without donations, we're not able to do that. We have over 350 schools across the country asking for our tree school. We need funding for it. So if you help Archangel directly, you're helping the youth and the children as well as everybody in your community. That's what we're all about.